Of the 12 American Triple Crown winners, only the first, Sir Barton, and the last American Pharaoh have happened by themselves in their respective decades. The other 10 have come in bunches. Three in the 1930s, four in the 1940s, three in the 1970s. Will there be another one in this decade? Before we can get there, we have to see whether Always Dreaming will take that next step in the Preakness Stakes. It's Handicapping the Preakness, next here on In the Gate.
They're in the gate!
They're in the gate.
In the gate.
They're in the gate.
It's a hip-hopping finish!
This is In the Gate, ESPN's Thoroughbred Racing Podcast. My name is Barry Abrams. You can follow me on Twitter at @BAbramsVoice or on Facebook at Barry Abrams Voice. You can also get us on our YouTube channel by searching In the Gate Podcast. You can get us on SoundCloud as well, which services the iTunes Store and TuneIn.com. You can get us on that pink podcatcher app that you didn't even know you had. And now you can subscribe to In the Gate in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. For the full In the Gate experience, subscribe now in the Listen tab of the ESPN app.
And Always Dreaming has moved outside of State of Honor and is putting in a bid for the lead with just a half mile to go in the Run for the Roses. Irish War Cry is poised on their outside, and Battle of Midway is right there, too. They're racing for the final furlong. Always Dreaming digging down deep on a two-length lead. Looking at Lee, wanders off the rail. Now with three lengths to make up and a 16th to go. But Always Dreaming is digging down, and Always Dreaming is holding on. Looking at Lee, can't catch Always Dreaming, who's the 143rd winner of the Kentucky Derby.
He had a dream trip and a lot of fight, and Always Dreaming now moves on from Churchill Downs to take on the Preakness at Pimlico Racecourse. Will he actually emerge victorious with a chance to complete the second Triple Crown of this decade? Let's break down the Preakness as we welcome in our panel of experts for this week. We are fortunate to have Zoe Cadman and Millie Ball of XBTV with us, as well as our good friend Chris Felica making a return appearance here on In the Gate. Zoe, it seems like, even though it's counterintuitive that horses should run back on 2 weeks of rest, it seems like Derby horses always seem to hold their form well in the Preakness. What do you think I'm missing here in terms of that disconnect?
I really don't think you're missing anything. And I'll give you a perfect example. I sat down with Bob Bassett the other day, and we talked about it because he's won four Derbies, and all four horses have come back and won the Preakness. And I'm like, is it that easy? And Bob's answer was, well, you know, I hate to say yes, but generally, if you win the Derby, you have the best horse. And, you know, we were talking about Todd's horse because I feel Todd had the best horse in the Derby. He is the best horse. There's really no reason to do anything in the interim. The horse is fit and ready to go, come back and run in the Preakness. And when you look at the history and how many horses have done that, it kind of speaks volumes, especially with the way the horse has acted on the track. Obviously, we saw last year with Nyquist that he was perhaps a little dull. Said was super saver. He was a little duller than he thought he should have been. So you have to take these into account. But generally, the best horse wins the Derby, so they should theoretically be able to reproduce the same or similar race just 2 weeks later.
Well, not just the Derby winner, but Bear, you have a stat, something like three of the last 27 winners of the Preakness did not run in the Derby. So, I mean, it's really all about the Derby horses. Do you see any outsiders here making a dent in this?
I think the logical horse, if you're thinking one of the new shooters is going to make an impact, would be Cloud Computing. I mean, Chad Brown could have run in the Derby. He thought the horse was lightly raced, only three lifetime starts, thought it was too much too soon for him to go in Louisville. And I think he might be the one new horse that I think most people would think would have a legitimate chance of pulling off an upset.
What about Multiplier? This is a horse who's been brought along slowly, but every time he's run, his buyer numbers have gone up. Do you think this is a horse that just needs a good challenge, or does he not have a chance here?
In my opinion, I'd find it really hard to give him a chance. I mean, you'd love to see, and that's what you expect to see at this time of year, three-year-olds improving with every single race. You know, it was a good thing that he was able to jump out of maiden allowance win and win a grade three. You've got to commend him for that. But he beat Hedge Fund and It's Your Nick and
he's not facing horses or never has faced horses like he's going to be facing on Saturday.
Now, Zoe, you have been out there. Millie, you've been out there. And you've actually seen these horses train. Now, Always Dreaming, we haven't talked much about Always Dreaming yet. He kind of won the Kentucky Derby. He was a real handful training in Churchill the week leading up to that race. How is he trained here?
He's trained excellently. You know, Churchill Downs is a whole different kettle of fish than probably anywhere you're ever going to see during Derby week. It's literally a zoo. So I don't blame him for getting upset. I kind of like the fact that Todd brought a horse so much energy to the Derby. And when you look at his races in the afternoon, he's very containable. And I think Todd knows this. It didn't bother me going into the Derby. Watching him train here, he got his number. He had a buck and a kick the other day, which I like to see. You want to see that from a horse to display that pre-Derby. So I think it's a big thumbs up for Always Dreaming. And I'm pretty sure Millie can agree with me.
I would, Zoe. I mean, he really has been a standout here training in the morning. I think what really caught my eye is how focused he looks. I mean, his head is down and he's bowling along and he really is in a zone training out here. One thing that I chatted with Todd about, and I think it's very interesting, and so many people have been hopping on about his record coming into this year's Derby, what, 1-for-45 or whatever it was. And the fact that Todd made a point of training this horse, of campaigning this horse differently. So he wasn't like many of his other, you know, Derby prep horses going into the Derby. This was a horse that was babied, if you like, through his earlier conditioned races, tested in the Florida Derby, came out of that race not even blowing in the Florida Derby, and then had a super fresh horse that was ready to run his A game on Kentucky Derby Day. And from what we've seen of him training, the amount of energy he still has, his eye, the way his coat looks, Todd says he hasn't missed a meal. I don't see why the victory can't come back and run at least as well. And history has proved that. If you look at Bias speed figures, I went back quite a ways and looked at Bias speed figures, and 2/3 of the horses will run at least as well, the same Bias speed figure or better in the Preakness than they do in the Kentucky Derby.
Well, you talk about being babied, Millie, but how much of the fact that Always Dreaming won the Derby was that he was the best horse, and how much of it was that, A, he had the best trip, and, B, there was a demolition derby that happened behind him of which he factored in none of that?
It's a very good point you bring up, because certainly he got by far the best trip between him and Classic Empire, and I'm more concerned about Classic Empire bouncing back in 2 weeks than I am the Derby winner, because he had to run that much harder in order to run fourth on Derby Day.
Yeah, I was going to say, Classic Empire, to follow up on that, Barry, you and I were having a discussion a little bit earlier today before we hopped on here. Do you think maybe the connections are looking at the field and now without Royal Mo in the race? I mean, it's going to be Conquest Mo Money on the lead. You're going to have Always Dreaming sitting right off in second. Do you think, I mean, you look at Classic Empire's best races. I mean, he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile basically from right on the lead. He ran very well at Cleveland as a 2-year-old, very close to the pace. He doesn't need to be a stone cold closer. I mean, do you think maybe they change his running style to try to stay a little bit closer to Always Dreaming and not give him such a big head start in a little bit of a closer race with even less speed than there was in the Derby?
I think you're right about that. I do. I see him sitting third right behind the top two you mentioned.
Well, here's the question, Millie. If Classic Empire had to rally as much as he did after that terrible break to finish fourth, that wasn't just a public workout. That was a race. So now if you have him laying closer, does he have anything left for the end?
That is my biggest concern with him. In watching him train yesterday, I thought he looked excellent. I thought he didn't look quite as good today, not quite as much energy today as he did yesterday. But I asked Mark Cathy, you know, why would you bring this horse back in 2 weeks when you can have other options with a horse that doesn't win the Derby? And he said, I have no reasons not to bring him back for this race because he's bounced out of the race. He said he was tired for the first 2 days, and then he said he recouped really quickly
and they just think, you know, he's good right now. He said he was blowing very hard after he ran in the Arkansas Derby, and he was very tired that day, which to me is a great trainer's indication that the horse needed the race. And then probably benefited once again from the Derby. So maybe he is primed for like the third race in the row. I don't know, but I'm getting the impression and the indication, having watched how hard he had to run in the Derby, that he might be a little bit tired this time.
We're going to take a short break here on In the Gate, but when we come back, we will consider the closers, even though our panel has said maybe not to. But we want to talk a little bit about Gunavera and Hench and what chance they have. So don't go away. Welcome back to In the Gate. We've talked about Pimlico over the years being a track with tighter turns, even though they're technically not tighter turns, making it more difficult for closers. But there are a couple of really good closers in here. And so as we bring back our panelists, Zoe Cadman and Millie Ball of XBTV and Chris Felica, our own Chris Felica, let's start with Zoe. You have a horse here, Gunavera, who didn't do a heck of a lot of running in the Kentucky Derby, comes from way out of it. He seems to be a horse that's coming into his own. What chance do you give him here?
Well, I've got to tell you, the last time I really laid eyes on him was the Florida Derby, and he looks like a different horse now. He's got a bit more pep in his step. His toe's gleaming. And in speaking to the connections, Antonio Sanna, even though he was far back in the Derby, he needs to be a little bit further back. It looked like Javier was maybe hustling him a little bit. I'm not really quite sure. I just don't think the horse is peaking at the right time after that big effort on Santa Cruz. I think he's kind of lost his way. He might have found his way now. Watching him on the racetrack, he just seems a lot more animated, like he's actually going to run. He was a bit flat before. I give him a big shot if the field comes back to him. Also, Hens, he basically kind of lost the plot pre-Derby. They're trying to get him to relax. And, hey, we haven't mentioned looking at Lee, who ran perhaps the best race of any horse in the Derby, to be frank.
I wish they'd left him, actually, for the Belmont. I could absolutely, you know, see that horse relishing a mile and a half. The Belmont, although it's not normally won by a horse that lays that far off the pace. We've seen it happen, of course, but not usually. They're usually more tactical in the Belmont Stakes. I think he's a very good horse over a distance of ground. He's got a beautiful stride on him. So I would love to have seen him in the Belmont. I think he has less of a chance in the Preakness Stakes because, again, those horses that have won recently have sat very close to the pace. So, I would prefer it in the Belmont. Cloud Computing was mentioned earlier on in the show, and I have to say, as a new face, I love that horse. I saw him this morning training, and he looked like a beast. You couldn't ask for a horse to look any better. He's a big 3-year-old colt, and he really looks like a colt. I mean, he's a solid boy. I loved how enthusiastic he was and how focused he was training this morning for Tad Brown. So I've used him underneath. I think it's the Derby winner with Cloud Computing, maybe to help me out with my price a little bit in an exacta.
Okay, Chris Felica, what do you think about the pace here? We talked a little bit about it. We talked about how you really do need to lay close. How fast do you think this pace is going to be, and does Cloud Computing factor into it with Conquest Mo Money?
Yeah, I think he'll be a little bit further back. I mean, I don't think it's going to be lightning fast. I think it's going to be very manageable. I think that's going to be very as manageable of a pace as Always Dreaming had in the Derby, which is why, I mean, you know I love to find a price to put on top and try and beat a favorite, but I think it just might be really hard to do here. I mean, I do agree with what's been said. If it is going to be if there is going to be an upset, I wouldn't put Classic Empire as the horse on top. I would take a shot with either Cloud Computing or Hence or Gunavera, one of the horses that didn't fare so well in the Derby to try and beat the favorite. But right now, I have a hard time thinking the favorite's going to be beaten. You're right about looking for a price in the middle. I mean, you go back the last 4 years, you've got Cherry Wine 17-1 last year. Taylor Verb was 29-1 a couple years before that. Rodon Curling was 11-1. So you've gotten big prices in the middle with a logical contender winning the race.
All right, well, here's the thing, Zoe. We might not make a lot of money, but are we going to see a really terrific race?
I think you're going to see a terrific race. I do believe the best horse is always dreaming to top Letcher. I was on him in the Derby. I'm not getting off him now. Classic Empire, I think, is going to run huge. I was telling the folks at SCTV the other day that I saw him for the Arkansas Derby, and I was there. And he looked like a fit horse. He looked a little bit light. And I'm not sure it's possible for a horse to put on weight during the rigors of the Kentucky Derby, but trust me, he most certainly has. So I'm going with that for him bouncing back in a very, very big way.
All right, well, thank you all so, so much. If Always Dreaming wins, we'll see somebody for the Belmont.
That's good to hear Chris, your voice again.
I hope so.
Thank you so much for having us.
Our thanks to Zoe Cadman, to Millie Ball, and to Chris Felica. Remember, we do In the Gate each and every week of the racing year. We get serious when we have to. We try to have fun when we can. But we do try to tailor it to a broader audience. So don't be afraid. Find us on that Pink Podcatcher app or the other places we mentioned where you can find this podcast. Tune in. You might learn something. And even crazier, you might like it. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter at B. Abrams Voice or on Facebook at Barry Abrams Voice. That's In the Gate for this week. Enjoy the Preakness. We'll see you on the other side.